You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
So, let's do an episode of Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Hello. What?
Oh, sorry. I said, yeah, let's do it.
Yes, okay. Hello. Starting over. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 10th, 2017. You're listening to episode 250, what did I say, four? This is 254.
54.
All right. My name's Rob. There's Jason. We've done this before.
Once or twice.
You wouldn't know it, though, based on how good I am at it.
Or roundabouts 240 sometimes.
Yeah. 250 sometimes.
Well, 240 some with both of us, but...
Oh, fair
actually,
enough.
Actually, no, probably about
250. Eh, well, I mean, well,
I think there's been... Yeah.
Add in the bonus episodes in there. And,
oh,
well,
that's
know,
true. There were lots of those.
We're basically at, like, episode 500 at this point.
It's 300 and something, because I actually had a builder recently who was newer say, hey, I'm trying to download your back catalog, but I can't... I can't get to the old stuff. And he said... what do you have it set at? And I said, I don't know. So I looked, and 300 is a max. It was set at 250 episodes to put out there. 300 is a max, so I put it to that. And he said, well, I can see most of them. That's good enough. I'll go get the rest myself.
So he's missing our earliest ones, huh?
Well, he can get them manually from the website.
From the website.
He was just trying to avoid having to manually download them.
Because
he was like, I just found your show. I'm going to the beginning, and I'm going to download all of them.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I know, right?
I mean, thanks for the downloads. We'll take it, but... Man, you don't know what you're in for. There's some dark days back there. I mean, there's plenty of dark days ahead of us, too, let's be fair.
Right.
Yeah. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Rob.
Hey. So, what's new with you, man?
Oh. Stuff.
Stuff and things?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay.
Working on some new games since Unpub, which we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I'm just working on some new games, some stuff, trying to chase down some possible leads, do stuff with those, and, you know, yeah, and then just work on some new stuff. I came up with a new game I'm going to pitch tonight that was just kind of inspiring.
Cool.
I don't know where it came from. It just was like, oh, well, that sounds neat. Let's do that.
So, right on. Yeah. Right on. That's good. Yeah. Kids out there, kids listening to this podcast, let me tell you, brush your teeth. Take care of your teeth, kids.
Yeah.
Because going to the dentist when after you've been stupid for a few years, it's not cool, man.
It's not.
It's not cool.
Did you get some cavities?
Well, I have some tooth pain right now.
Uh-huh.
And I have a dentist appointment scheduled a week and a half from now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping I can just tough it out.
Right.
Take some ibuprofen and get there and not have to do an emergency trip.
Right. Those are expensive.
Yeah, man.
Hey, I had tooth pain one time. You know what I needed? A root canal.
Yeah, well, so I broke a tooth, that was a root canal, and I actually had two broken teeth, and there was the one that was visible, and they were like, hey, let's do this one first. So I had a root canal, and that wasn't fun. Actually, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it might be.
It's not great, but it's not... You expect it. When they say root canal, it sounds worse than it
is. Yeah, yeah. But I've got a temporary crown on that right now, and then because that tooth like full on broke off,
oh.
It was bad. Yeah, so I've got a temporary crown on that, and I've got a week and a half from now I've got an appointment to go back and get my permanent crown, and then they're also going to look at this other thing, the other broken tooth that's causing me some pain now.
Okay,
yeah, so that's not so cool. I don't enjoy that.
So stop chewing on rocks, first of all.
Yeah.
Because clearly, if you keep breaking teeth, you're doing something wrong.
Well, so the other thing is that the one that is causing me some pain right now, it's actually an old baby tooth. Because I was born without the seed for an adult tooth in that spot. So for
that
my...
It's weird.
It is weird, right? Yeah. I'm kind of a mutant. My mutant power is to not have a tooth. So for you know, a long time, the dentists were like, well, hey, you know, if you can maintain that baby tooth the rest of your life, that's cool. But it started to, you know, because baby teeth, the roots eventually start to resolve, right? You know, so the roots started to resolve, and then it got loose, and then just, you know, it dissolved from the bottom up, from the roots up, and eventually got to a point where it just weakened on its own. And then I like bit down on the sanders one day and it snapped.
Right.
So, yeah. But anyway, kids out there, take care of your teeth. Brush your teeth. Mouthwash, floss, all that stuff. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth it. Go to the dentist and get your teeth cleaned regularly. Because,
every 6 months.
Because insurance pays for that. Insurance is not so friendly when it comes to all this other stuff.
They want you to do, that is a time when they actually want you to do the preventative care.
Yeah, and you should. So there's my life lessons for people in the world. Yeah. Cause your teeth can rot in your skull for a long time and before it gets bad, but then trust me, it's real bad at that point. So anyway, that's
most exciting stuff.
That's how things are going for me right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Hey, I'm about halfway through watching Iron Fist. Have you seen any of that yet?
I haven't. I was going to rush out and watch it, and then everyone hates it. So,
yeah, right? Like a lot of the reviews are just terrible. And I don't think it's that bad. I'm kind of enjoying it.
Do you think it's just suffering from three really good shows?
Yeah, I think so. Like season one of Daredevil was really good, and then Jessica Jones was amazing.
Yeah.
Season two of Daredevil was just kind of meh. And then Luke Cage, I thought, was super fun and really cool. A lot of people didn't like the end of that.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was magnificent. Yeah, right. Like, for me, it was a tough choice between that and Jessica Jones, which ones I like better. Yeah. So Iron Fist, I think in any other context, Iron Fist would be kind of a silly, goofy, fun superhero show. But against that backdrop that they've already established, it's a little harder to swallow.
Right. Right.
And his character, well, number one, that actor is not great. The guy who plays.
Yeah, pretty much everybody has said he's just not that interesting.
No. And I mean, the character is written to be kind of overly earnest and naive. Like that's how they've written the character. And I don't know if that's true to the character from the comic books or not, but
I don't know.
But that's how he's written, which I can see that rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. But on top of that, the guy who plays him is not really. Not adding a whole lot more to the character other than him being kind of whiny and naive.
Okay.
So that's too bad. But everybody else in the show is great.
Yeah, the girl, I can't remember what her name is, but I saw her from the trailers beating people up, and she looked amazing.
She's cool, yeah. And then there's a guy, a kind of a corporate dude, who they set him up as like the main villain in the first episode, and then you realize pretty quick that, oh no, he's actually super tragic and sad, and like he's like my favorite character. Because he's not really a nice guy, but he really wants to be, and he's kind of stuck in the middle of stuff.
Is that David Wenham?
No, it's a different guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's David Wenham. I love that guy.
He's really good, too.
He's a fun actor.
He's really good, too. His character isn't given as much room as I would like, but he's still fine.
And the thing about Daredevil Season 2, by the way, just to draw back to that, because it's not great, but it has some things that are great, like The Punisher. Is one of the best incarnations of the Punisher I've probably ever seen, I think, personally.
Parts of how they deal with the Punisher in that are really good, but other parts are total garbage.
Yeah.
The way his story arc wraps up is words I'm not saying on the show.
I can't remember how it wraps up, but...
It wraps up with a super, super awful and dumb reveal at the end of the season that I'm not going to spoil. I just spoil.
I don't remember what the reveal is that was so bad.
Just, it's yeah, it was, it was shameful.
I really liked the Punisher.
Yeah, that actor did it well.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, yeah.
So what was the reveal? I have to know now, because I don't understand. You can just cut it out.
So, yeah,
but
anyway.
Speaking of Daredevil season two, you know who I can't stand?
Who's that?
Elektra.
Yeah, I've never liked that character.
They will never make a version of Elektra, mark my words, that I will not just despise.
Yeah.
Like, every incarnation. So, I was a huge Jennifer Garner fan, okay?
Yeah.
And then, nope.
No. Well, that movie was terrible. And then this Elektra was certainly a lot better than the first Daredevil movie and then the Elektra movie. But it's still not good.
Yeah. No, it's just... I don't know. I just don't... She just doesn't feel like she's a great character, you know? Yeah. One of my favorite characters throughout all is, I really like, I can't remember her name. Rosario Dawson.
Yeah, she's great.
Claire, is that her name?
Claire, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like her. And I saw she's in Iron Fist, too. That's not a spoiler. You just assume. Mm-hmm.
It's, so. But even that's written kind of poorly. Like you know, she is who she is in Daredevil. And in Jessica Jones, it's like she's doing the, you know, oh, crap, this again? Oh, boy, eye roll, right?
Right.
And then in Luke Cage, she's like a really meaningful character. And right. she has an arc and she advances. But so far in Iron Fist, she's basically just doing exactly the same thing she did as in Jessica Jones. Which is like, oh, boy, eye roll, here we go again.
See, but I kind of feel like she's like a hanger-oner of superheroes, right?
Well, that's how they're setting her up, right?
Yeah. Which is too bad because like everything else about her character doesn't fit that because she's super nice and cool. Mm-hmm. But then she's like, I just want to be around superheroes.
Well, but I see the thing is that she doesn't want to be, right? She keeps trying to get away from them and they keep finding her.
I kind of feel like she does want to be, though.
Well, that's the eye roll that she does, at least in Iron Fist. Well, I think in Iron Fist and Jessica Jones, she kind of does that eye roll.
But in Luke Cage, she's like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's Luke Cage, that's why, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's what I would say to him. I mean, whatever.
All right, so moving on. Yeah. Anyways. The trailer for Spider-Man looks super good.
I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch
the
that.
The newest one. Yeah. It looks good.
The good posters, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got the jacket. Oh, that's great.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So I'm very hopeful that this will be another knockout for Marvel.
You mean for Sony?
Well, Marvel is the one that matters. Yeah. Sony's going to make some money. We all know they didn't have any say in what was happening in that. I mean, come on, because if they did, it would suck.
Yeah. You heard that they're going to do a Venom movie? Whatever.
An R-rated Venom movie.
Yeah, come on.
Which, if there's a character that deserves an R rating, if they were to follow the Venom, the original Venom story arc, fantastic.
Yeah.
It would be great.
I think Venom's a dumb character.
Oh, I love Venom.
I think he's stupid.
But I bought his very first series, his first limited run, and I thought he was amazing.
He's stupid.
But, yeah.
Whatever.
I thought the Spider-Man black suit idea was stupid.
Oh, really stupid, yeah.
You're like, oh, an alien gives you the powers that you already have. Yeah. As a standalone character, I think that's cool.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you can't have that character without the baggage of his backstory and the fact that he's an alien symbiote.
Oh, yeah. I'm not okay. I'm not mad about that. I'm mad about Spider-Man with that. Venom is a separate character. It's okay. But, like, Spider-Man suddenly has an alien.
But Venom doesn't exist without Spider-Man, though.
I think he should.
But he doesn't. That's. I mean,
you're saying he'd be better if he did.
He wouldn't exist.
Here's the thing. How are they going to do this? Spider-Man's not going to be in the movie.
No, you're right.
So
I don't know. Are they going to rewrite his entire backstory, which makes him even more stupid?
Yeah, I bet they will because it's Sony.
It's just, I don't know. Venom is stupid. Venom is stupid. I think he's really stupid. I'm going to keep saying that.
Hey, so on a non-related note, first for Marvel movies, but still not about games.
Yeah.
Trading Spaces is coming back.
What?
Remember Trading Spaces? That Trading Spaces is the show that ran from 2000 until 2008, where two friends, like neighbors-ish people, decide to trade houses for a week and fix up a room in each other's house with a designer comes in. Did you not ever see this show?
No, but...
So all the shows we see now, all the Do Your House Over shows, all that stuff, this is why that happened.
Who cares?
It's coming back. I'm super... It's one of my favorite shows ever. It's great. So...
Okay, I'm very happy for you.
You do not like house shows where they fix up houses and stuff?
Do not care.
Really? Because you're into like fixing up houses and stuff.
When I had a house that I had to fix up all the time, I wouldn't say I was into it. I would say that I was open to doing it because I had to.
I see.
Yeah, I don't care.
We moved into a house that we didn't need to fix up, and then we're fixing it up anyways. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it looks really nice what we fix up.
Sure, yeah.
Even though we don't, you know, I mean, it's not like we have to. It's just like we've been here for a couple of years now, so put your stamp on it, right? You
know? Sure, yeah.
So, yeah.
I plan to do that in our new house eventually.
Someday. Your last house was a big fixer-upper, though.
It was a very big fixer-upper.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still is. I mean, I'm hoping somebody buys it because I want to get rid of it.
Your house.
I mean, we got an offer, but, you know, it's not done until it closes.
That's true. So. Fair enough.
So, knock on wood. I'm not going to do that because it'll shake the microphone, but
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, how about we move
Let's talk about some game stuff, because that's what this podcast is about.
Game stuff. All right. So we were looking for a topic recently, because we talked about how finding topics is the single worst thing about hosting a podcast.
The
worst. Talk about stuff. And unless we could just talk about movies and stuff, in which case,
hey,
we'd be
new
all
podcast
set.
Idea.
We could fit like 12 hours of
it. Hey, how about we cut this down to a 30-minute podcast, and we talk about movies and stuff, and then we pitch a game.
Nice. You know what? Honestly, builders, we probably wouldn't lose any good insights from that. So.
No, right? The way we fumble through garbage.
But anyway, so we asked on Twitter for people's thoughts, and we had a suggestion. I should probably say who the suggestion was from, since it was a good idea, and we're going to use it.
Yeah.
It was from Nick Shaw.
Nick Shaw. Thank you, Nick.
Nick says, serious topic.
Uh-oh.
How would you go about inventing a new gaming mechanism?
Ooh.
Would you know it's new?
You mean like stacking cubes and tiles?
except for there was another game to do that before you.
I know.
By the way, Nick Shaw from a distance looks like he's your brother. Not like your actual brother, but like he could be your brother.
I disagree. I know what my brother looks like.
No, like he looks like you from a distance.
You're holding your phone like 3 feet away from me.
See? He's right below you. See?
He looks like a dude. Looks like a nice guy, I'm sure, but he looks
like
a
dude. His photo looks a lot like yours.
Okay. Thank you, Jason. Hey, let's talk about new mechanics.
It could be like single white female, except for it's a single male podcaster.
I don't know what that
is. He's stalking you. Maybe he's Nick Shaw. Are you trying to turn into Rob Couch?
Is that
what's happening?
Is stalking a thing?
Single white female.
I don't know what you're talking about. Is that a TV show?
It was a movie.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry,
that's a big cultural reference point.
Is it?
Yeah. Because
I've never heard of it before, and I like to think that I'm in tune with culture. When did that movie come out?
I don't remember.
All right. Thank you very much.
Late 90s.
Late 90s? Okay.
So, or maybe mid 90s. I don't know. Ask your wife. Say, single white female.
Guarantee she has no idea.
That's true. She's bad with that time frame. Anything.
Guarantee.
Pop culture.
Guaranteed.
She'll be like, I was too busy being homeschooled, not watching R-rated movies.
Right.
All right.
Well, it was R-rated, so I just learned something.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So how do you know if how do you go about trying to innovate, and then how do you know when you've actually innovated? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. So I would wager that the harder of the two things is knowing if you actually did, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
for instance, you came up with on your own in a vacuum, the idea of stacking cards and cubes or tiles and cubes, right?
Yeah, but I never imagined that I was the first person to ever think of that.
Right, but
you know?
It seems like a very unique idea, right?
Maybe presented in the way that I did. But even then, I know that it wasn't, because Pagoda came out and did exactly the same thing mechanically. I mean, gameplay-wise was
very
totally
different.
But,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess for me, I think coming up with new ideas is really hard. It's really hard to come up with new ideas and new approaches to things. Like, for example, I pitched that idea of pulling cards out of a deck with tweezers, right? Like,
right.
I don't believe that I'm the first person to ever think of that, not for an instant, but it was a new and exciting idea to me that I've never heard of before. So new to me is one thing. New to everybody is an entirely different thing. So I think it would be really hard for me to convince myself that that really truly is a new mechanic. But,
we've seen it done before.
Have we?
Deck building 20 years ago was not a mechanic.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant about tweezers and cards.
No.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. I don't know.
For that, dice building wasn't a mechanic either until after deck building.
Right.
Let's talk first about... let's just assume, how do you know? You know if people see it and they're like, whoa.
Well, right.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Sure.
Right?
And eventually enough people say that and you finally start to say, maybe I kind of have something new here.
Right.
But the only way to know that for sure is to either have an encyclopedic knowledge yourself of games, or getting it in front of a whole lot of people.
Right.
And getting that feedback.
And yeah, and so that's doable. But so let's talk about how you actually would go about. Now, when I think of creating a new mechanic, I don't just think about like using something differently than it's been used. For instance, when John Gilmore was on the show, he talked about his game he pitched on the show was called Verbosity, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like a cross between the game Upwords. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm shocked that you remember something. So Upwards is like Scrabble, for anybody who doesn't know, but you stack the tiles.
Right.
And you get extra points for stacking the tiles. I think each tile is worth 1 point.
You know, I've never played it. I always wanted to.
Oh, it's actually a lot of fun for a word game.
I'm just bad at Scrabble, and so that was like, I'm sure I'm going to be even worse at that.
Yeah, but. Yeah. No, you would be, for sure. But he combined Upwards with a city builder game, right? And the way he did that was he went to this website. He told me what it was called, but I don't remember, and he didn't tell me on the show, so I don't have it recorded. Basically, this website, you go to it, and it does a deep dive of mechanics on Board Game Geek. And it says, these are mechanics that have never been used together before, right? Mm. And some of them are very obvious, like a children's game that is a storytelling game about World War II, right? Like, you know, hey, guess what? We get it. But other times, you know, it can be something that makes a lot more sense. Like, nobody's made a word game that's a city builder, right? And so he was like, oh, got it. I'm going to do that, right?
Oh, that's neat.
So, yeah, so that's what he did. But I, no disrespect to John, because I think that's a really great idea, but
yeah,
I'm not going to call that an entirely new mechanic, right?
Sure. I mean, stacking tiles.
Right.
Yeah.
And building cities.
Yeah.
He combined two mechanics to make something feel new. But I think what Nick is talking about is Nick is saying a new, complete new way to do something. Like the first time when there was a game with deck building, right? Mm-hmm. To have, like, check this out. You take the cards and you put them together this way, mm-hmm. and you do this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the thing that. You know, so, what are some tips maybe on how to try and do that, right?
Sure. So, okay. So, let's see. In a lot of ways, I think the first tips that are coming to my mind are tips that I would give to anybody who's just in a creative rut. I would say, you know, look at something that works and ask why it works. Try and really dig into something that already works and really, really get your head around why it works and what about it works. And if you changed a certain piece of it, would it still work? You know?
Right.
Get really analytical and very technical about things. Let's see. Other ways to approach that.
Well, the other way would be the opposite, right? To look at things that don't work, right?
Sure.
Look at games where you feel like, gosh, this could be better.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What's missing from this? You can look at your own prototypes, other people's prototypes, published games. I mean, come on. There are several published games where you're like, what's happening with that?
Yeah, that's good.
You know, I think that one of the things you're going to run into is most mechanics that you come up with that are new are still going to be familiar, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking over at my smash up over there is a shuffle building game, which mm-hmm. is, it's basically deck building. Yeah. It's just instant deck building, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, sure you can give it a cool name, but that doesn't change the fact that it's, you know,
sure.
It's still something else that you've just tweaked slightly.
Right. And that, what an unput, we all got free copies of Epic PvP. They looked like it was basically just that same thing again. But instead of shuffling two races together, you're shuffling a race and a class together.
Right.
Yeah. And I haven't opened my copy to look at it yet.
I haven't either.
So then I guess you could say another option is to look at something and ask, how could I do this with different components? I mean, that's basically what dice building did from deck building, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How can I do this using different materials?
Right.
A lot of people are exploring that right now with Roll and Write, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, they're saying, how could I take all these pieces and put them, you know,
on a piece of paper.
And for better or worse, you know, because we've seen good, we've seen bad, and we've heard about good and bad. And mm-hmm. with each mechanic, really. But anytime there's an influx of, you know, of new things. Another thing that was really hot last year was micro games, right? Now, that's certainly not a new mechanic. It was just saying that was really a design with restrictions challenge, right? To say, listen, you've got 18 cards. Mm-hmm. Do something amazing with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing is that this is really difficult to do.
It sure is.
Right. But I do think really the best thing you said, Rob, was look at something that's being done and saying, could I do that with different components? And start there, right? Because that's where you can see. I mean, so dice building from deck building, that's a little simpler, right? You're like, hey, deck building is neat. Hey, I could do this with dice, right? Right. But that could have been taken a step further and then turned into something completely different, right?
Yeah.
I was looking at my game shelf just trying to see any... You know, another game that I feel like it was very different. It's a building game, but Castellan. Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I always called it Castellan, but I don't know what it...
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I've never heard it pronounced for real. So, from anybody who knew, but that game very much was building in a different way, right?
Sure.
Familiar feeling. Mm-hmm. A little bit almost reminded me of the old pen game. Remember where you have like the dots and you draw the lines?
Oh yeah,
you
know? Totally.
It was almost kind of like that, but it was with real components.
Yeah.
And a little more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So takeaways here. One, very, very difficult to come up with something completely new. Mm-hmm. Not just because, and I would say not just because, people aren't smart enough to, but the fact that so many things have been done, mm-hmm. the chances are when you come up with a completely new mechanic, it's not completely new.
Sure.
Second, the best thing you can do is look at something that's being done, figure out a way why it works, how to make it different enough that it's its own thing. If you're looking to just make something new and crazy, but not completely revolutionary, one thing you could do is look to combine two mechanics that haven't been done before. Or combine two mechanics in a way that hasn't been done before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, that's the best kind of new, because that's like, oh, this is like this, but different and better. And that is always what kind of piques my interest, because it's familiar enough to make sense.
Sure.
And then remember that one of the biggest pitfalls of coming up with something completely unique and new is people won't have anything to relate it to. And that can be tough.
That can definitely be tough.
So that can be tough to explain.
Yeah.
And to get people's attention on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's probably about all we're going to get out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my brain is... I'm struggling to add on to that. So why don't you pitch a game?
I will pitch a game. Pull up my notes here. All right. So I got back from an unpub, and this happens to me a lot at unpub. I come back, and I just want to make something new. Because you've been playing games for a while.
Yeah.
You've been playing a lot of your own games for a while. You just need to get something new out of your head, and... sure enough, when I got back this time, I had something pop in my head, and I was thinking about wanting to make a game that captured the experience of hide and seek. Why? I honestly don't even know. But the I was thinking about hide and seek, and something that popped in my head was, you know, back in the day when people would play hide and seek, they count and then they would yell "Ali Ali Oxen Free," which we never did, but other people
never did.
So. In fact, I thought that was weird that people did that, but they did.
Yeah,
so,
no, I never did that.
So anyways.
That sounds crazy, and nobody should ever do that.
Yeah, well, that's what I named this game.
Oh, well,
because hide and seek was a silly thing to call it.
Great name.
So,
is this the sequel to Water Balloon Washout, hide and seek? Oh, no. Ollie Ollie Oxenfree?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
So this is 2 to 4 players. Theoretically, it takes about 15 minutes. But since I've never played it, I really have no way to believe that. Okay, so the idea of this game is, like I said, I wanted to really, like, make it feel like it was hide and seek, but a little more difficult. So you've got 25 tiles, and these tiles would be like rooms in a house or whatever. I don't know. Maybe you're in a mansion. It doesn't matter. But at the start of the game, you know, these 25 tiles are set up 5x5 grid. So there's a center tile, right? The main player, the seeker for that round, which if there's a 4-player game, everyone's the seeker once. They will close their eyes and they will count slowly to 10, just like you would with regular old hide and seek, and then they'd say the Ali Ali Oxen Free when they were done to give you a warning. And during that time, if you're the player, one of the hiders, your job is to take a little flat chit and put it underneath one of those tiles, right? Anyone you want, even the tile that the middle tile, right? So then the player is going to immediately take their pawn and set it on the middle tile. And then we're going to use dice to figure out what happens next. So the seeker, he can earn up to 25 points, He can't, actually. He starts with 25 points, but every time he reveals a tile, he loses a point, right? And at the end of the round, he's going to gain points equal to the number of tiles that are left unrevealed.
Okay, 5x5, got it.
Yep, so he's got some things he can do with... he's got some things that he can do with on his turn. So what's going to happen is there are five dice, and I'm sorry, I forgot. Now I remember why I had two spreadsheets. Because the other one had the dice in it. They've got five dice you can roll, and each side of the die has two things that it allows you to do: one for the seeker and one for the people hiding. Right. So you roll these five dice, you get the results, and now these could easily be like symbols or something, but I just did 1 through 6 for ease of prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen is the seeker is immediately going to draft one die. And then everyone else will draft one die, and then the seeker is going to get to what is left over. So he's going to get two while everyone else gets one, right?
Okay.
So the actions are as follows. One and two are both search or hide. Search being flip over 1 to 2 tiles. I'm still working on that. I think it's going to be 2 tiles because otherwise the game would take literally forever. So you flip over 2 tiles. That you're adjacent to. And adjacent in this game is...
Your pawn is next to? Okay.
Yeah, is only orthogonal, right? When you do that, if the kid's under there, you found the kid, right? Now, with the kids hiding, if you're the player who controls the last kid hiding, you get 5 points. It's the only way you can earn points during a hiding round. Does that make sense? On a result of 3, there's focus and distract. Focus is pick a player who's hiding. They have to point to a tile that's within 3 tiles orthogonally of where they're at or of where a player is. Doesn't have to be them. No, it is where they are hiding. Sorry. Distract is move the seeker pawn 1 space orthogonally in any direction. So that's what the hider would use. Move is just what it is. Move up to 4 spaces for the seeker, and block, which is take that number 4 die and put it on the board. And the player cannot pass through that one for the rest of the turn. Okay? So it kind of blocks their path. And then a move I haven't thought of yet. I forgot that I haven't thought of one. And protect. Protect is you can put that on a put the 5 on a tile, and the seeker cannot flip that tile this turn. Now, you could do that as a trick, right? Or you could do it because your guy's actually under there and you don't want him to flip it over this turn. And then 6 is wild. Anyone who chooses 6 can use whatever corresponding number they have, whatever number they want. They just change the die to that number and use it. So those are the actions you can take. In the game is simply go back and forth, taking turns with the dice until everyone has been found. And after that, the play rotates to the next. And, yeah. So that literally is what I have for the game so far.
Okay. So once somebody is hidden, they cannot move their tile?
Not right now, yeah.
So when I played hide and seek as a kid, it was hide and seek, and the person who was doing the seeking would have to find you, but at some point the kids who were hiding would want to come out of hiding and get back to base, and the base is whatever the seeker what was closing his eyes, you know? And that, and when you get back to base, that was kind of part of the fun is sneaking out of your hiding place and not being seen. Or if you were seeing, then it's a race and you got to run to the base before the seeker touches you or tags you.
Okay.
So it sounded like a combination of hide and seek and tag.
I like that.
Yeah, and it was a lot more fun than just simply hide and seek.
Right.
Because then, you know, then everybody was involved in the people who just wanted to hide could just hide, you know, but the people who wanted some excitement or wanted to take a chance could still at some point jump out and make a run for it.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad. So a way to handle that in the game could be that, if I were going to use a move, so make move just an action that I can use as the, instead of the block action, just use the move action, right? So that is move for everybody. So what I could do with that is when I move, I reveal where I'm at. So you see where I'm at as the seeker. Then you close your eyes and I move myself. So basically you hear where I'm moving from, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't know where I go to, right? So that way it's not simply like, because otherwise it, basically says to the seeker, I should just stay at base all the time, right? And just search around me. Mm-hmm. And then maybe if a, which actually that makes the hide action better, being able to flip a tile back over. Cause I was like, why would they necessarily want to do that? But yeah. Yes, because if a tile is face up and you're on the tile, he sees you and you're caught, right? So
could you make it so that they could move two tiles if they don't rehide, or they can move one tile if they choose to hide again?
That could work, yeah.
Just again to give them a little bit more to do. Do I want to move a little bit and then hide again, or do I want to make a run for it?
Right. If you make a run for it, so if I can see you, but I have to get to you,
and then
right?
You can get to get and tag, get over right. And tag him. Yeah.
So basically, just get within one square of you, adjacent, and that would count as tag.
Move on to the same square.
That's true.
Because then the seeker could always move two spaces.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's worth thinking about. So in that case, then moving onto a square could auto search.
Yeah.
When you step on a square, you automatically flip it. So like walking through a square, so because that would be nice. It would simplify the actions, right?
Yeah.
Basically, everyone has the same goal,
right?
Then there'd have feel like then there'd have to be rules about how close you could be to the start point, then to the center square. You know?
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to hide on base,
right?
That'd have to be an obscured spot. You might need more tiles too, more than just 5x5.
25 is a lot of tiles, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, well, so those are my only thoughts.
That's good stuff. Yeah, that gives me something else to work with. I felt like there was something else that it needed.
Mm-hmm.
I think being able to go back to bases, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, because just hiding once is kind of boring. Because like,
I agree.
That game that I got, the Phantom Society, that yellow game, the Phantom Society, that's, I mean, it's... You know, one player, it's either two player or four players, right? So
right.
Ghosts versus Ghostbusters, or, you know, two players of the ghosts and two players of the busters. And you hide your ghosts once, and then it's still fun because it's kind of deduction, but also because it plays really quickly.
Right.
You know, and if it went on for too long, it'd be super boring.
That's true.
Yeah.
I never was able to get over that I wanted that game to be something else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The artwork made me think it was going to be some different experience.
The artwork is really good and should be in a better game.
Right.
But I still think it's a fun game. I like it. It's a real simple deduction game. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I got.
Okay. We had a good Twitter question here that I thought I would read.
Yes.
This comes from a gentleman that I feel like I've met him before. His Twitter is at Van Ryder Games. I think his name's AJ. Anyway.
Yeah?
Yeah, he says, curious what you guys think about podcasts kickstarting their podcast, and have you guys considered doing it? Do you have a comment on that, Jason?
Yeah, but I feel like I should let you comment on it.
So,
because you're a lot more passionate about your answer than I am.
I am, yeah. So you know, if somebody wants to do a Kickstarter to do their stuff, you know, by all means, that's fine. You know, or a Patreon, that's cool. You know, I mean, doing this stuff does cost money, right? We had to buy microphones so we don't sound like garbage.
Right.
You know, and we have to get together. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to edit the show. We need, you know, computer equipment to do that stuff. We travel to events and all that stuff. So there are costs involved in this, not to mention, you know, web hosting.
Yeah, totally. So
if somebody chooses to do that, then I totally understand why. You and I are lucky to have wives that let us indulge in hobbies and spend money on our hobbies. And we let them do the same, of course. We're also lucky enough to be financially in a situation where we can afford to do that. And I feel like our deal with builders has always been that, you know, we're not going to ask you for money for the show. You know, we want to provide this entertainment for free. We want to provide this actually, hopefully as a potentially an educational tool or as a motivational tool for you guys, because it certainly is that for us. And we have a lot of fun doing this, and I don't know that it's really necessary for us to get paid to hang out and have fun. For me, what I do ask is that when we've got a game on Kickstarter, that is the time for builders to help us out, you know. It helps you guys, because it just kind of helps us keep going, keep at it, you know. That's kind of my perspective on it, that we really want your support and we appreciate your support, and the best way to support us, I think, is to back our games when they hit Kickstarter or when they are, you know, on the market, when they're available. It's, in my opinion, it's the best way to help us. And honestly, it helps you too, because then you get a fun game out of it.
Right.
You know? So I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
No, I pretty much agree with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't think anybody would want to buy ad time on our show.
Yeah, no. Ad time is something we've always said we would never sell.
Yeah, not interested in that.
We don't want to be, we don't want to ever appear influenced by something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that way you guys know that if we're plugging something, it's something we believe in, you know?
Right.
And Kickstarter, and I just, again, I don't want to run a Kickstarter. I don't like, I'm not a business guy. I don't want to have to deal with that with the IRS. I don't want to have to, I just don't like that. I'm not. Meh.
All right. On a different note, I think we have some voicemails.
Oh, okay, cool.
So. Oh, not leaving a message. I meant change.
Oh, we're leaving a message because this is Unpub 7. And we're
calling. The game.
We're saving
the deadline.
Goggle voice number.
Goggle. I wanted to change your message.
Everybody who's on this message. We got Robin Jason. Matt Loomis. We got
Matt Loomis.
Robert Johnson. Daryl Andrews. Ben Goodback.
Dan Halston.
Isaac Shawad. Say something, Isaac.
Hey there.
Matt Riddle, what's up?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's calling, and you listeners have just gotten a treat because you are here to listen to nothing. That's nothing, because we're eating this. Go listen to the podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, we were all out to dinner at Unpub, and
Matt Loomis decided we should call us.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, so that was Matt calling us, and Rob and I were actually sitting at the table when that happened.
Uh-huh.
We just weren't talking because, well, we don't need to talk on our podcast. We talk enough on our podcast.
Yeah,
so.
That was fun.
Yeah, so here is another one.
Is this a real one?
I'm not sure this is from.
UG, the New Rocks, what's going on? Listening to episode 251, the Rolling White Right, and by the time he uses voicemail, this is all going to be irrelevant, but, you know, what's new? One, tracking stuff in Unreal Estate, you can use a token, like a small cube, and when you write to a certain space, you put the cube on top of that space, and then when you use that power, you remove the cube, and if there's no cube on your board, then you don't have those abilities. That, of course, was gifted to us by T.C. Petty III via his ingenious roll-and-write game, Diva Java, the coffee game, the dice game. Alright, later guys.
Always good to hear from you, Len. Thank you for cementing that last part that says I will not use that mechanic in that way because T.C. Petty used it. And I'll never be as good as T.C. Petty. So, you know.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
Neither of us will.
Right. So one last quick message, and then I think we're ready to wrap up here. Then we'll be out of voicemails.
I want to say that the first time I saw T.C. at Unpub this year, he just gave me a huge hug. And, man, T.C. can give a good hug.
I believe it.
Yeah.
He looks like a guy who can give a mean hug.
It was warm.
Julian Rexford, again, episode 251. Rob is now talking about Aquanauts. And you made a comment, Rob, about how you started developing your spreadsheet and putting in the powers and stuff like that. And that got me to thinking, like, one of my biggest hangups is how to get started, how to really use a spreadsheet. And they sell a spreadsheet, right? It's literally an infinite number of columns and rows. And each one has those square. And so how do you use your spreadsheet when you get started? Have you used it differently in different games? you know, Jason, how do you do it also? And have you had different experiences? Like, where do you start? Is there a general, like, all my columns are going to be the names of the cards, and then column B is going to be, you know, the first power? Or just generally, how do you fill in that grid, that infinite grid of boxes that can be very daunting when it first starts with a blank sheet? Just a thought. Talk to you later. Bye.
Do you want to go first?
Well, that's a super solid question.
It's a great question.
You're going to have a lot to say about it, so I'm just going to give one specific piece of information that is very important to me,
okay.
Which is whenever I'm doing something with this and, like, for instance, I'm working on a real estate dice right now, and so each column, and I did this with the Mechanical Suspects too, so each column is, so for instance, in Mechanical Suspect, there's multiple guys on a card, right? Each space on that card gets its own column. Now, why? Because I'm very big on balancing by the numbers when you're doing first doing prototypes, especially because you don't have anything to go on but your gut. Other than that, it might as well be balanced. And then as you play, you may notice, oh, balance doesn't actually feel quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But so like each one will have its own column so that every single robot, I can count the number of times that robot's name appears so that I can make sure they're all as even as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I use almost the exact same format every time. Sure, my column headers will be different. But yeah, I use almost the same. And I don't use Excel. I specifically use Google Sheets for ease of gaining it from anywhere, you know, accessing it from anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I also use Google Sheets most of the time for that very reason. I would rather use Excel because I'm more comfortable with it.
Me too. And it's better.
It is better, but just to make sure I can see it and access it anywhere, yeah, I prefer Sheets. So how do I set that up? So the first thing I always do is I always have a separate design doc where I'm making notes and talking about what it is. And then I'll get to a point where I will describe in that design doc what information I want on my spreadsheet. And I will probably just give myself a bulleted list in that, identifying what the different column headers need to be. And then I will put that on one screen, and on the other screen, I'll start setting up my spreadsheet. So I always start with a column. I'll call it a card number. It might be a tile number, whatever, but a card number. And I'll just first thing is I'll drag that out and to be however many, number of those components that I need. If the game has 52 cards, I'll drag it out from 1 to 52. If it's got 100 cards, drag it out from 1 to 100, right? And at some point I might start consolidating that down as I get duplicates of cards in there, but I always start with the max out there so that I can kind of see right off the bat, you know, how big is this? How much information do I need to decide on? All right. So, number two, I always put in a card name or a tile name column, and then I leave that blank. I don't fill that in until I'm really close to the end of the data. And then, like you said, every piece of information that's on that card has a separate column. Like for example, with Autumn Leaves, every card in the prototype I had, every card has a color, it has a species, and it has a number of nuts.
And that's three separate columns. It's
three separate columns. And in fact, you know, nuts are out of the game right now, so I'll be able to remove that column, that piece of data. But then the next thing I do is that in a game where I'm going to have an economy, like for example with Aquanauts, there are different things in there that have different values, right? I've got three different types of resources, you know, and then I've got a victory, and there might be a victory point value or whatever. So those all might come in as one field or one piece of information on the card. So the card's going to have either maintenance cost or exploration cost or victory point value, whatever it might be, right?
Yep.
But those are all still separate columns.
Oh, interesting. I actually will combine those columns.
Yeah, and I do that because I like to be able to do sums and totals and things at the bottom or whatever, you know?
That
or
makes sense. Only, if I need to do that, I will break it out. But.
And then the next thing I always do is that I will always, at the top of the page, if I've got some kind of economic situation, where I will make like a simple table of value equivalencies. You know, like I'll start with one victory point. If victory points is my base measure or my base value that I have to equate everything back to, I'll start and I'll say 1 VP equals 1 VP. And then I will say 2 maintenance equals 1 VP. And then I might say 3 exploration equals 1 VP.
Oh, nice. Okay.
You know? And then so then I'll have a maintenance column, and I'll have an exploration column, and I'll have a VP column. And then after each one of those columns, I'll have like a root value, because 1 VP equals my root value. And so if I put in there, if I have 1 maintenance, I already established above that 1 maintenance equals, or that 2 maintenance equals 1 VP. So in my true value, my core value for my maintenance field, the true value will be 0.5 VP.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so that way I can always go back and make sure that, you know, columns are consistent or that values are consistent across the board. I can do simple formulas to make sure that stuff adds up correctly. If I want to make sure every card always adds up to the same overall core value,
right,
I can do a simple formula at the end and it can make sure that I check those numbers. So when building an economy, that's how I like to set that stuff up. And I'm not really good at it, but with Saloon Tycoon, it took a lot of work and a lot of revision for me to get there.
Oh, right. Of course.
Tons and tons and tons. And none of it was right the first time. I think when I finally sent AJ and Evan my final spreadsheet, I was like on tab 12. And every time I would do revisions, I would just create a new tab in the sheet.
Right.
And just copy all the old stuff into the new one.
Right.
And then change values in the new one. That way, if the changes I made were totally terrible, I could just always roll back to the previous version and I'd be okay. You know? And so I think I did have 12 tabs in that spreadsheet. Maybe it was 10 or 11, but I think it was 12.
That's crazy.
And then I think AJ and Evan, I don't know if they actually looked through all that in detail, but if they wanted to see the evolutionary process of me getting there, then they had that access to that information if they wanted. Also, as it progressed, I would always clean up the formatting every time and make it a little easier to read for myself, you know,
right,
color coding, et cetera. So anyway,
cool.
So I try to be very careful and very deliberate about that stuff, and knowing that I might want those core values later, might as well get them in there right off the bat. So
I agree.
That was my reasoning.
That's good stuff. No, that's a lot of what I do as well. So
cool. All right. That's probably all we got time for, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So thanks once again, everybody, for listening to the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I'm @poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and other hot podcast sources. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG and buy our games. Go to buildinggamepodcast.com and buy a copy of Water Balloon Washout, or go to thegamecrafter.com where you can buy Finish It, the outrageous storytelling party game, the Rumplebum Academy for bug-based baking, Treasure Trouble, and 8 Arms to Hold You. And that is all we've got. So, Jason, tonight I'd like you to take us out with a joke.
That's rough.
It
just
is.
Just a joke.
Tell us a joke, Jason. Be a funny guy.
I don't feel like I know. Like, see, the thing about funny people, right, is like they don't necessarily just know jokes. Like, ask a comedian, tell me a joke.
And most comedians excuses. Like, tell us a joke.
I don't have a joke. I'm literally blanking out here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I literally cannot think of a single joke
right,
put
big
on
fail.
The spot.
Big fail.
Well, if you don't put me on the spot with this stuff, then that won't happen. But
yeah.
Oh, no, that's an inappropriate joke.
We're all waiting.
I have a joke that I always tell, but
uh-huh.
It's inappropriate.
You can't
so
do
not
that.
I'm tell it on the show.
Okay.
So,
wow. So the joke tonight is that Jason Slingerland. The joke is Jason Slingerland.
I don't have any jokes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Jokes on
no
you.
No jokes.
Okay. Good all night.
Right. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Lego Darth Maul is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I like his hat, though. That's neat.
Yeah, it's just a little crown thing that goes on his head.
Yeah, that's neat. It's just weird that he's... Is this like the first ever topless Lego man, Darth Maul?
I don't know.
Because he's not wearing a shirt?
Could be.
Might be the first ever bare-chested Lego man in Lego history. I've never seen a bare-chested Lego man. And like I would say like Chewbacca like doesn't count, right?
Right, because he's covered in fur.
Yeah.
Not just tattoos.
Right. I don't see any Lego nips, though.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, it's probably for the best. Yeah, but seriously, I think that this might be the first ever topless Lego man. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I think we've all learned something today.
I think so.